Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
Washington, D.C. is a totally safe city. You're not reporting any crime because there is none. They said crime is down 87%, and I said, no, it's not. It's down 100%. We have a great thing going. I could do that with Chicago. We could do that with New York. We could do it with Los Angeles. So we're making a determination now. Do we go to Chicago, or do we go to a place like New Orleans, where we have a great governor, Jeff Landry, who wants us to come in and straighten out a very nice section of this country that's become quite, you know, quite tough, quite bad. So we're going to be going to maybe Louisiana, and you have New Orleans, which has a crime problem. We'll straighten that out in about 2 weeks. It'll take us 2 weeks, easier than D.C. But we could straighten out Chicago. All they have to do is ask us to go into Chicago if we don't have the support of some of these politicians. But I'll tell you who is supporting us, the people of Chicago.
This is like a popular 90s sitcom. Will they, won't they? Will Trump or won't he go into Chicago? I hate to say it, but I'm not sure what he's waiting for. Welcome to Wiggins America. I do know that he's probably trying to cross off a lot of legal boxes before doing this, because if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. And if the people of the city are fighting you, I shouldn't say the people of the city, the leadership of the state and the city are fighting you, then you got to have all your ducks in a row before you start doing this, because you want this to be a success. You don't want this to be just something that you do because you can. If you're going to send in the National Guard into an American city to fight crime, that's a big deal. And that's why we're reporting on it here, first thing from Wiggins America. I got a story later that I'm going to share with you about my own, I don't want to say brush with crime. It's more like brush with dilapidation and just watching chaos in the city. That's at the end of this show. I'm going to save that for then, because in the meantime, you have a president who is willing to do this, willing to go in and help with crime in basically any American city. Why he's chosen Chicago to talk about, I don't really know. I don't know the answer to that. I guess because it puts a doof. I hate even talking like that about leadership. I just don't like doing it. But your governor, J.B. Pritzker, my governor, and the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, it really puts them on the heels. And I guess politically that's a good move, but ultimately it's about solving the problem. And if Trump can go into a city and solve crime, like he has in Washington, D.C., like we were just talking about the stats there, if he can go into Chicago without them wanting it and still solve crime and walk away looking like a hero, I mean, it really does make those people look like doofs. And that may be part of this, although there's not really any major American city where the blue mayor is calling for help. I've seen people say that the Baltimore mayor is kind of like willing, but Haven't really seen any public calls for that either from him. The Baltimore mayor has been involved in a weird other controversy about his military service recently. It's not that important, but also stupid. But the leadership of Chicago is against this. And they pay lip service to crime all the time. They want to sound like they're solving crime. Because either A, they don't know how to actually solve it, or B, they don't actually care about solving it. I'm going to guess that it's B, especially when you're Mayor Brandon Johnson and somebody asks you, why don't you put one of the 150, this is what the reporter says, 150 officers who are part of your security detail, why don't you put them on the streets to protect Chicagoans?
And your wife, Stacy, be willing to cut your security detail from 150 sworn police officers and put those police officers back on the street where they can protect real Chicagoans?
So we're very proud of the work that we're doing collectively to ensure that our police officers have the resources that they need. As I've said repeatedly, it's policing and affordable housing. It's policing and youth employment. It's policing and mental and behavior health care services. It's going to take all of us, the business community, the philanthropic community.
Now he goes on, but let's stop right there and acknowledge that he is absolutely not answering that question. It's a holistic approach. So this is a rehearsed line that he's giving that, well, we do want to solve crime. There's the lip service. But it's more than about crime. It's about affordable housing, and it's about the price of gas, which also, you know, I don't know specifically that he's saying the price of gas, but the prices of groceries and stuff. Look, like, this stuff is taxed like crazy by you. You could actually do something about that, but you don't. So it's all, literally all lip service, and they add things like affordable housing because that's a big enough problem that they can't really do anything about it. So they'll say that one because they know not really much we can do about that, but we'll act like we're doing something. Ultimately, the residents of the city have to decide that they want to do something different. I do think, though, that if Trump goes in there with the National Guard and shows them that it can be different, that's probably key to this whole thing. Because that's the problem, is that you get really used to what's around you. Because it doesn't usually happen instantly. You know, it's the boiling frog thing. If it happened instantly, you'd notice it, and there'd be an outcry. But it's happened slow enough that you just got drugs and homelessness and trash and all this stuff, aside from the crime itself, that just becomes like part of the landscape. And you just go, it's just normal. Because we've all gotten used to this. We've all gotten used to crime. We've all gotten used to telling people where they can and can't go. Don't go to this area. Don't go to that area. Don't go out to eat past dusk. Don't do this. Don't do that. And that's good. That's caring. But, you know, there are times where that wasn't an issue where you live. You know, saying don't go past a certain block, past a certain time, that hasn't always been that way. But it's just getting worse, and the block keeps getting closer. You know what I mean? All right, we'll take a short break. We got a lot for you in this show.
Wiggins America.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Tricia Siegman is back in the studio, and I'm very glad about that because we don't have you back enough.
Thank you for having me. I've actually gotten married since the last we spoke. It's
that's
Tricia
not true.
Everding now.
No, that's not true.
No.
We talked about you having a baby on this show. And that was way after you getting married.
I'm just joking.
So you, I like to have your perspective on certain issues, and this is one of them. Because you're very news adjacent. You're involved in all of the things we do here at the station as the assistant PD or whatever. What is your title?
That's it.
Yeah. Right?
Brand manager.
And yeah, brand manager. And so you are plugged into the news. You know all the people making the news.
I know a surface level of about everything that's going on.
Yes. But when we get into certain issues, it's like, yes, you have an understanding of the issue, but you don't have, like a host would, like me, Annie, Mark.
It's not my job to go deep.
Yeah, you're not like, oh, I need to dive into this and really find out what I think about it. You know it's happening, but you don't necessarily go all in and have a position. So with that in mind, I want to ask you about redistricting and gerrymandering.
Okay.
As kind of a layman on the subject, you understand that it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about Texas doing this and then California following? They haven't done that yet. Texas has done it, but California's trying. And I'll just stop there and just, I want to know what's in your head as an average voter. Does this even matter to you?
As an average voter, I want all of the districts to accurately represent the people in the district at the best way possible.
Yeah.
As I understand it, not all states have districts that accurately represent the people that are living in those districts. And
I would go so far as to say that no states do.
And the point of redistricting is to get a better representation. Correct? Am I on the...
No, it's actually to... if a state votes Republican enough or Democrat enough, and they have full control of the legislature and governorship of the state, then they're saying we need to max out how many U.S. House seats we get out of our state because our state has spoken. We are very blue. We are very red. We need to get the maximum amount of red or maximum amount of blue out of that state. So it's not necessarily representing the percentage of voters.
It's just what the state then brings to the national level.
Yes.
Hmm.
And so with that in mind, is this good that this is happening? Is it bad that this is happening with Texas and California?
Well, I guess it depends on what side you're on and who's in charge. You'd want like your state, if you voted in your state to, and your state is a red state, you'd want that represented or more properly represented on the national level.
Yeah.
But if I'm super liberal and I'm living in a community that's super liberal and I chose to raise my family there and I'm living, because people kind of congregate where they feel like their values are represented.
Yeah, people cluster together.
Correct. If somebody comes in and like draws a line down the middle and is like, now your representation, despite the fact that you've put all your eggs in this basket and built a home here and poured yourself into this community, now your representation is in opposition with what you believe, I can see an issue with that.
And vice versa is true, too.
Right.
If you live in Eastern Oregon and your district runs all the way to Portland, you're not being represented well either. You're being told that you're basically going to vote for this person, or you're going to be represented by somebody. Mm-hmm. You may not know who, but you're going to be represented by a liberal or a conservative, vice versa. So I guess the bigger question that I'm trying to ask you is, as somebody who is aware of this issue, but is not super plugged into it, does it even move the needle for you? Do you care?
No, I really don't. Unless you can tell me why I should.
Well, you live in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and Illinois is highly gerrymandered
mm-hmm.
to the
Aren't
Democrats.
Aren't we talking about, to some degree, gerrymandering in the other way, though?
Yeah, like, well, yeah, it's both ways.
We just want our side to gerrymander?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. Like the national conversation.
Let's go back to the very basics. How are the districts determined presently?
By the legislature of the state.
And how do they get, do they just like randomly draw a map and they look at it and there's enough of them sitting in a room and they're like, yeah, that looks pretty good. And
oh
then
no,
they
it's very precise to the point now where like even the founders would go, wow, the data that we have now that we're able to carve out districts is beyond what anybody ever thought.
But what are some of those data points that we use to There's got to be my brain is like, there's got to be a right way and a wrong way. And we say that gerrymandering is the wrong way, but we're like so comfortable with the wrong way that we're like, oh, we'll just also do the wrong way on our side. So what is the like baseline right way to do it?
Okay. Trisha, you are very, very wise.
Thanks.
Because that's the question. Ultimately, that is the big question that nobody can solve. Is what's the right way to do this? Because you're right, we've gotten comfortable with it being more and more partisan, but nobody's figured out how to say, well, but if we just did it this way, that would fix it.
It would be fair for everybody. And
yeah. And there are certain restrictions, like you can't have too many minorities in one district or vice versa. You can't have not enough. So there's racial, like, court issues that can come up,
mm-hmm.
but that's when and the district has to be contiguous, so it has to connect to itself. It can't be like, here's a blob here and here's a separate blob and
there's like a little island blob down here
and they're the same. That's Lesotho. And it's the same district. You can't do that. So that's really the only guardrails on
it.
So
you have to have a percentage of,
and the percentage of the population of your state all has to be the same in each district. That's the other thing.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see little bitty districts like in Chicago, because that district has 430,000 people in it, and like all of Southern Illinois, because that district also has 430,000 or whatever the number is. So that's the only rules. So outside of that, you can kind of carve in where these districts run. And I currently live in a district where it's a snake. I mean, it runs from East St. Louis through me to Bloomington and some other little bitty college towns along the way to create another Democrat district. And therefore, I'm not represented well because the people all around me, they're not voting for that. I'm voting with people in outside of Peoria or whatever, mm-hmm. you know? So that's the problem with it. But you asked the exact right question. Okay, well, then what's the right way? Nobody's figured it out. They try to do commissions and this and that, but they always end up being corrupted, you could say, by politics. Like even in California, they tried doing a nonpartisan commission. Well, that nonpartisan commission made California, which just voted like over 40% for Donald Trump, that it had 9 Republican seats out of like 55.
There's no way to take politics out of it.
Yeah. So no matter what you do, the politics are going to be involved in it because it's political.
Mm-hmm.
So the solution that people have come up with now, which has been weird because nothing was ever preventing people from doing this before, but now they're saying, here's what we do. We all just max gerrymander.
Like everybody pick. It's like,
yeah,
it's like dodgeball and everybody's picking their favorite player away.
And that's, so Democrats have done it a little bit heavier than Republicans by number. So now Republicans are like, all right, let's get the pitchforks and go for this thing, because now if we fully do it, we'll outnumber them because they've done it already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everybody's done it, but Democrats have done it just a little bit more over the last couple decades than Republicans, because Republicans are always a little behind, a little more like, well, we'll just play it safe, the old country club thing. But now Missouri's going to do it. And if Missouri's doing it, I'm like, okay, we've crossed the Rubicon now.
We're
because
in.
Missouri,
we're doing it.
Other than our attorney generals, we don't really nationally lead on a lot of things. Like mm-hmm. Andrew Bailey and Eric Schmidt actually did.
Lot of our people have put us on the map recently.
Yeah, they have. But it's been because of their boldness in mm-hmm. attorney generalship.
Yep.
But aside from that, our state kind of plays it safe. And this is the first time I've ever seen, and it's like max kudos to Mike Kehoe for saying, yeah, we're going to play that game too, because that's really the only way to do it now. And the minute they did it, it was like, okay, then that's the way we're going to do it. I just don't know if the average voter, which is why I'm talking to you, cares.
I don't. So I wish I did. I appreciate the background. I would like to say this is bad or good one way or another, but it's not something that is moving the needle for me personally. I know it's
actually
interesting, but
I'm glad to hear that, because it is such a deep political issue that my gut feeling was that this really isn't going to, it'll change things in the numbers of the House.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change anything in the way people vote. because you have to already be plugged in to really care about this. And if you're that deeply plugged in, you already know your opinion. You're not going to flip on this. And it's not going to change turnout either, which is another big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you did answer my question, which is this going to change anything? Well, the answer, yes, it's going to change things because it'll change the makeup of the districts and the U.S. House. But as far as people voting on it, I think the answer is no.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In light of last week's shooting in Minneapolis, the transgender guy who just decided, I hate everybody, except for my family, in his manifesto, he loves his family, who affirmed his ridiculousness. I'm going to go kill praying kids. I'm going to go kill Christian kids. Tulsi Gabbard posted this online. I thought, this is great. I want to read this. It says, God is love. The very essence of God is love. Therefore, during times of hardship, sadness, pain, and suffering, we naturally and spontaneously take refuge in Him, in love itself, because we know in the core of our hearts that it is only the power and light of God's love that can drive away the darkness of evil and hatred, which was manifested so tragically and violently upon the children praying in Minneapolis on Wednesday, last Wednesday. So why is it that people like Jen Psaki and others have such a spontaneous, visceral, negative reaction to those who are praying to God for refuge, strength, and for the well-being of the victims of this heinous attack? Because they do not believe in God or His love. Their response is rooted in their hatred of God. They want to be God, so they view Him as their competitor. They are agents of darkness and hatred, and the light of God's love is a threat to their dark ambitions. One manifestation of their darkness and desire to be God is their belief that any man can become a woman, and any woman can become a man. This is the insanity and darkness that has unfortunately perpetrated today's Democrat Party, or perpetuated, and is one of the reasons why I could no longer associate myself with them. Again, this is Tulsi Gabbard. It is especially during times like this when the darkness of hate descends upon us that we take shelter in and manifest the light of God, which is love. Reverend Martin Luther King spoke the truth beautifully when he said, darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. This is the Director of National Intelligence. I think we got a good team. I really like her. I think there's a big future for her. In the Republican Party, yes, in the Republican Party. Even if you disagree with some of her policies, just keep an eye on her. A lot to come in the next 4 years, I think, even from her. Now, I got to talk to Mark Cox and Dan Buck on the Mark Cox Morning Show this week, and an interesting topic came up.
Wow, Wiggins America.
Well, if you missed our segment about 30 minutes ago, we were talking it over with Dan Buck here about his memories at working at Show Me St. Louis, and one of the most impactful interviews you felt you got to do over there, which was the last TV interview with Jack Buck.
Yeah, it was so emotional, so incredible. And his work with cystic fibrosis, which became really his passion the last probably 10, 12 years of his career, wrote the poetry book, in fact, for the benefit of cystic fibrosis. But I could tell it was near and dear to his heart. And I think you have a story about that, Ryan, well, and your personal connection.
Yeah,
to Jack.
Dan, I mean, I'm pretty open about this on the station, although I don't expect that every time I talk about it that everybody's listening. So you may not know that I have cystic fibrosis. And I remember growing up, my mom was very involved in fundraising for cystic fibrosis during my childhood because she couldn't work a full-time job because she had to take care of me. And so she was just, you know, kind of threw herself into the issue. And of course that was to help me. And I was around a lot of the St. Louis cystic fibrosis community.
Sure, the events.
And Jack Buck was always involved. And I never really knew exactly why. I just heard that he was very passionate about that issue. I assumed that he just knew somebody. I never knew. But I was little. I was a very little kid. And there's still a picture of me in my parents' living room when I was probably 6 years old, going into the booth with Jack Buck. I had been, I don't know how I got the invitation,
wow,
but I got
awesome.
To go in there with Jack Buck. And, you know, I'm only five or six. I'm very little. So I remember the event because the picture's been there for so long. But my own memory of it is very spotty. And because everybody's like, oh, you got to remember going in there to the booth. And I said, no, I don't really remember the booth very well. I remember the view. And that was kind of neat because I'd never seen that before. But all I remember about Jack Buck is that I was kind of nervous because I didn't know what was happening. And he turns to me and he asked me a couple questions. And I was clearly going like, yes, no, whatever. You know, just little bitty answers. And then he goes, you want some ice cream? And I was like, yes.
You want some ice cream?
And he took me into this, I don't know, personal kitchen that they have or something up there where there were some other people. And I just remember thinking, this is amazing because while I don't know who Jack Buck is, but this man just jumped the line for me to get me ice cream. That was the most important thing of that moment for me.
For a six-year-old, that's important.
That's huge.
And that's what I remember from meeting him is the view and then him doing that for me. And then I became very comfortable with him. And I think he knew that. And so he knew the language of a six-year-old and how to speak it.
Well, I can tell you how his love affair and his commitment to the cystic fibrosis started. They had brought a child in, and many charities would have that part of their auction where they would bring in people to the booth. Well, they brought a cystic fibrosis kid in a wheelchair. He had tanks, really a severe case of a young boy. And at the old Bush, the angle of that booth was up above this first level of the broadcasters. There was a second level that was a good 8-10 feet above them with the wall. A line drive came in so hot at an angle. Jack said he'd never seen a ball come off a bat that fast towards them. So fast that Shannon, who loved to catch foul balls coming at the booth, ducked. I mean, he didn't want any part of this line drive. And it just cleared their heads and went straight up over the top of this boy's head, missing him by about a foot. It hit the ceiling, it hit the wall, it hit a sidewall, and the ball bounced on the ground and jumped up and landed on this boy's tray of his wheelchair. And like a cat, two hands pounced on it. Jack got so emotional. Like, he knew the odds of that boy catching a foul ball that day were 1 in 1 million. 1 in 10 million. And the fact that that ball landed where it landed, at the velocity it went by him, and to hit all the sidewalls and everything and to give that boy that thrill of catching a foul ball that day. And he passed away a few weeks later. Jack had to leave the booth. He was so emotionally driven by what he had witnessed. Shannon told me he cried literally for like an inning or two and couldn't return to the booth. That was the start of his commitment to cystic fibrosis, and said, God's telling me I need to get more involved with this organization. And spent, like you said, so much of his free time helping out families and fundraisers for that organization.
I mean, it's a lot of people, but Jack brought a lot of attention to that issue when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not really a stretch to say that I may not be here if he had not gone into that issue and fundraised like he did. Because I don't have time to give my own personal long story here, but there are medications that have come along in my adulthood that would not have happened if not for a lot of fundraising for a long time.
Wow.
That in my mid-20s, I got very, very sick. And then a medication came along that was just due to people fundraising for it that has given me a completely new lease on life. So,
it's neat to say. So many people hear cystic fibrosis, and Jack's the first person I think of.
Yeah.
The impact he's had on that disease.
Another reason to miss and remember Jack Buck. That's a great story, Ryan. Well, we're glad you're around with us, my friend.
I'm
glad you're doing well.
Like you said, I mean, just like God's timing, you know. And it's hard to speak to people about it because sometimes everybody's different and everybody's timing is different in different families. But for me, it has been exactly what I needed.
Wow. Every breath is a gift.
Yeah, it is. I'm getting gas yesterday coming into work. at a gas station in like semi-North St. Louis, not like deep North St. Louis, but we're talking about north of downtown. That's about where I get off of the highway to go to come to work here, downtown St. Louis. And I'm looking around, and this is the kind of gas station, okay, that is pretty rough. But in the morning, it's fine. It's crummy, but there's no real threat. There's no crazy danger going on at 9 in the morning or whatever it was. In the afternoon, I'm a little more leery to go there because, man, it is wild. It's like loud music. There's people peeling out in the parking lot. It's like one of the only activity centers in that area, so people like congregate there, even though it's pretty crummy. And I'm looking around and going, gosh, what have we become? We get numb. If you live there, that's just what you have. That's what you see every day. And it just becomes normal. I don't live there. So when I drive in, I'm like, oh, gosh, this is freaking terrible. And when I come into downtown, I'm thinking the same thing. You know, I was even trying to think, what are the nice parts of downtown anymore? You got Ballpark Village, which is very nice. And like the immediate surrounding area there is kind of fun still. But outside of that, I'm trying to think of even an area where you go, yeah, that's where, you know, we like to come in, even if you don't live in the city, we like to come in and go eat there or whatever. Used to be Washington had some restaurants. They still do. But my wife and I, who love coming we live in Illinois, coming into Missouri and finding restaurants and stuff when we can, you know, despite the kids' schedule, we don't ever go there. And maybe we're missing out, but I don't really know of anything that's got any sort of buzz that's there. And I'm not trying to trash it. I mean, I hope that it succeeds. Like, there was a while where Washington Avenue was pretty cool. Like, it was making a rebound. I just don't know if it's there anymore. And I'm trying to think of anywhere else. Like, U City, is that even considered the city anymore? Is that county? Because it's still got some cool stuff and a lot of culture still happening there. We went to Fitz's for the kid's birthday there for back in May. So, you know, there are spots, but man, few and far between. And I mean, downtown is dead. Outside of Ballpark Village and Cardinals games, Blues games, thank God we got City SC despite the stupid MAGA hat controversy. You know, who's going to put businesses down here? That one is unique because, A, it succeeded. Like, they actually got it done. And I'm sure there was a lot of tax subsidies and stuff that they got to move here, a lot of incentives that you have to do now. But this is a soccer town. And the whole area is like soccer crazy. It's this little soccer hub. So they were nuts not to have a team here. So the moving here was because of that. I don't think it was because they're like, oh man, downtown St. Louis, that's the place to be right now in the country. No. I mean, we got kind of lucky, I think, getting them. Again, despite the politics stuff, because that drove me nuts. But all that to say, I'm standing at this gas station. And 5-10 years ago, it's got some, you know, nice brick stanchions on the outside of them that probably looked really nice at one point, but they're all falling down. Some of them are all crooked now. They're still there, but they're dilapidated and hit by cars, and they're just, nobody even fixes anything anymore because they're like, it's just going to happen again. You know, each one of them has probably been hit 4 times, and it's just gross. And the guy next to me gets out of his car, and it's kind of a junked up car, but it's 9 in the morning, so he's obviously not, you know, still asleep. I guess that's good. And just really, like, wave of weed hits me, which is not uncommon, as you know. And I'm thinking, man, I'm looking at this guy. He's probably in his late 40s, scraggly, in this junked up car, high as a kite. And I'm like, this guy is going nowhere, man. This guy has no hope, and he is just mired in the middle of this. And right now, I don't feel super unsafe. But give it a few hours, get after lunch, afternoon, this place becomes crazy. And I will not go there most of the time because of that. And I'm looking around going, why would anybody not want more police? You know, this is the stuff we talk about, really big stuff. I talk about economics a lot and some social stuff, of course. But this is one where the policies of the Trump administration and on down, because it's all cities and everybody involved too, you know, they could really have a direct visual impact on your town, your city. And while the idea of deploying the National Guard into cities around the United States a few years ago, I would have been like, dang, that is frightening. Do we need that? But we're there. We do need that now. It's gotten so bad that people are moving all out of blue states because of bad policy. And a lot of that's crime. It's also economic. They're moving out of blue states left and right. You can see that. And they're moving into red states. But it's not just that. They're moving out of blue areas of red states. That's how bad it is. It's so microed down that if you have Democrat leadership even in a pocket of a city, people are moving out of that. Because the differences of ideology is so stark in the way things are run from the top to the bottom. I'm talking little towns that if you're not running them right, people are out of there. Because the ideologies, you know, the social ideologies even are so far apart now that we don't have a lot of common ground on how things should be run. And that's why when you see Trump at the national, the highest stage, saying, let me send in help to you at the local stage, and the local people and leaders are saying, no, we don't want that, something's broken. Now, you may not love the idea of the National Guard coming into your city, but I'm just telling you, and I painted this picture to tell you this, look around. If you're probably listening to 97.1, you're probably like, send them in. You know, I don't know exactly who I'm talking to here that is protesting this, but if you happen to be listening and you're on the fence about this, or you're a Democrat who's like, ah, Trump, that fascist is trying to take over my city. I mean, look around your freaking city. What are you trying to preserve? Look around St. Louis. What exactly is there that you're like, yeah, this is trending in the right direction? Even if you have some history and you have nice buildings and Forest Park, you know, that's a nice area. But are you like, this is all, like, people are clamoring to get here? Of course not. Do something. I'm just thankful that the president is trying to do something about that issue. He can't solve all of it by himself. And there's a lot of people even on the right who are like, look, he could send in the National Guard to Chicago. The problem is he's going to clean it up. And then you can't sustain them forever. They have to do something on their own. So the minute you start to draw back the troops, it's just going to go back to what it was. We have to have an ideological change in this country toward sanity. I mean, the people of the cities, I'm almost like, forget the leaders. People of the cities have got to decide that we've had enough of this. That's the only way it's going to change. And the only people left with money in the city, great, great dichotomy happening. When I was at that gas station, I'm watching all of these just people high. You know, the guy's almost hitting other cars as he's driving out of the parking lot. Super, super high. And nobody cares, you know, and except the guy who almost get hit by his car. And I look down at the little TV on the pump, and I'm looking around at this absolute poverty and just abject hopelessness. And the little TV is playing a recipe and saying, well, the cheese at the bottom of this quiche gets a little too spongy. And I'm like, what better example of like elite Hunger Games nonsense going on in the midst of this? Like, this is probably more of a liberal thing that they live in these areas, keep leaving the area and moving to other areas that are a little safer, and then telling everybody how to live while simultaneously ruining everything. It was so weird standing there with the recipe on the TV. Anyway, I got a frog in my throat. We're almost done. I think we've made it, actually. It's time to wrap up Wiggins America. You can get the entire podcast by typing in Wiggins America, and it's in multiple locations, multiple platforms, all of them wonderful because they're carrying the show.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.